Hi. We're here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And we're on page 104. At the very bottom of the page, there's a devotee question. And last week, because we need to talk about last week briefly, because this is a continuation. So last week, Ramana Maharshi had told this devotee that if the mind becomes introverted through inquiry into the source of the I thought, then the latent tendencies and the conditioning would become extinct. And that's how we would come to know the truth. And he said, this is the sum and substance of all that an aspirant need know. Right? You know, it's funny because we ask so many questions and we want to learn so much stuff. But he says, this is it. This is all that you need to know. And that's what leads into today's question. Again, the only thing that we need to know is that we want to become introverted and inquire into the I thought. And that if we continue to do that and continue to do that, and actually I can feel the power of it in this moment, all of our latent tendencies and all of our conditioning would become extinct. And of course, this is doing it on a very consistent basis. You know, so I have a desire that pops up in my mind. I think I want something. You know, who is it that wants this desire, or what is it that sees this desire? I have a worry thought cross my mind. You know, who is it that sees this worry thought, or what am I, right? Just all the time, all the time. And you can see, maybe, I can see how if you really did this, all of your latent tendencies and conditioning would become extinct because you're not feeding any of it and you're continually reflecting back on awareness, right? So if we were highly consistent in self-inquiry, both in meditation and not in meditation, that would end the mind for us. So again, he says, this is the sum and substance of all that an aspirant need know. This is the only thing you need to know, one thing. And now we'll begin today's. So the devotee says, forgive me for scratching my head like Jacqueline, but actually what happened, what happened for me was I bumped my head the other day on the retreat house van, the back of the van, and it's created this bump, and this bump is now in an itching phase. You know, so I'll try to forget about it, but it's itching me. So here's what the devotee says. But any endeavor he may make, meaning the aspirant, but any endeavor he may make is limited to the mind in the waking state. How can such inquiry conducted in only one of the three states of the mind destroy the mind itself? And I don't know what Ramana Maharshi is going to say, but I do remember at another time reading Ramana Maharshi saying that if you practice inquiry consistently enough, it will continue in your sleep. And in fact, there was somebody that told me not too long ago that she experienced inquiry, practicing inquiry in her dream. So I don't know if Ramana Maharshi is going to say that or how he'll answer, but the question itself brought up that remembrance for me. But again, you know, the question is, if I'm the limited mind, how can the limited mind, and especially during a limited time frame, only the waking state, how can inquiry consistently in that time destroy the mind? First of all, I have another comment on this. Isn't it just like us to ask questions like that instead of practicing inquiry all day through the waking state? You know, like I think our questions are their own resistance, right? What if instead of asking a question like this, we said, to whom does this question appear? What am I? You know, what if we just started right now? You know, Ramana Maharshi just said this, a question arises, I'm going to practice it right now on this question. And we began to practice self-inquiry as consistently as he really keeps pointing towards. I'm sure we would get more benefit out of that. Isn't it just like us to ask a question like this, which means we're continuing to resist is what it means, right? So again, the question is, but any endeavor the aspirant may make is limited to the mind in the waking state. How can such inquiry conducted in only one of the three states of mind destroy the mind itself? Ramana Maharshi says, inquiry into the source of the I thought is no doubt initiated by the, and I have to look up a word, it's a Sanskrit word, saraka. Let's see, and of course I probably said it completely wrong. Okay, but it means spiritual aspirant. It's funny how sometimes they don't just insert the English word. Inquiry into the source of the I thought is no doubt initiated by the spiritual aspirant in the waking state of the mind. It cannot be said that in him the mind has been destroyed. But the process of self-inquiry itself will reveal that the alternation or transmutation of the three states of the mind, as well as the three states themselves, belongs to the world of phenomena, which cannot affect his intense inward inquiry. Self-inquiry is really possible only through intense introversion of the mind. What is finally realized as a result of such inquiry into the source of the I thought is verily the heart as the undifferentiated light of pure consciousness, into which the reflected light of the mind is completely absorbed. So I'm going to look up some English words now. Alternation, which I thought I understood what that meant, but it's making no sense to me at all in this sentence with my definition, so there's got to be another one. Okay, alternation is the repeated occurrence of two things in turn. So the process of self-inquiry itself will reveal that the repeated occurrence of the three states of mind, as well as the three states themselves, belongs to the world of phenomena. The repeated occurrence. And we'd have this repeated occurrence, you know, 24 of us take naps, but some of us don't. But whether we take naps or not, we still have this repeated occurrence because we wake up, we go to sleep, we dream, we wake up, we go to sleep, we dream, we wake up, we go to sleep, we dream. And right in deep sleep, dreaming and waking are the three states of mind. And so that it's a repeated occurrence for every human being, right? So what he is saying, again, is that self-inquiry revealed that this repeated occurrence of the three states belongs to the world of phenomena. Now, he also has the word transmutation here, so I'll go ahead and look it up. The action of changing, or the state of being changed. So it's a repeated change, these three states, right? A repeated change. And so again, he is saying that the process of self-inquiry itself will reveal that the repeated change of the three states of mind, as well as the three states themselves, belong to the world of phenomena. And I'll finish the sentence in a second, but what he's really saying is waking, sleeping, and dreaming are all illusory, are all dream. We would say they're all part of the fourth principle of God. And you might be able to imagine that consciousness at the second principle of God doesn't sleep, doesn't dream, you know, doesn't eat, doesn't need exercise, doesn't get sick, right? All that kind of stuff belongs to the human in the fourth principle of God. So that's basically what Ramana Maharshi is saying here. So again, I'm going to read the entire sentence now because I've been stopping after the word phenomena. The process of self-inquiry itself will reveal that the repeated nature or the change of the three states of the mind, as well as the three states themselves, belongs to the world of phenomena, which cannot affect this intense inward inquiry. He says it can't affect the inquiry. In other words, the inquiry is more powerful than those three states of mind. So in this way, he's negating what the questioner said. If I'm only doing this in one of my three states of mind, you know, how can it have an effect? He's saying the inquiry itself, the checking in with awareness, which is, of course, beyond the three states of mind, is so powerful that these three states of mind just don't affect it. It doesn't matter that you stop at some point and go to sleep and then wake up and resume. You know, it has nothing to do with it. The inquiry is touching the real, and the real trumps the unreal, right? Then he says, self-inquiry is really possible only through intense introversion of the mind. And I wanted to comment on that, even when I was reading, but I kept reading, but I wanted to stop and comment on that because I have noticed the difference. I'm sure you guys have too if you practice inquiry. I have noticed the difference between what I would call genuine inquiry and mental inquiry. The mind has a way sometimes of just saying, what am I? And no looking actually happens. It's like a thought, right? I can tell by looking at some of your faces that you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so that mental inquiry, that thought, you know, what am I? Who's looking at this? Without any real deep looking, that's not what Ramana Maharshi is talking about. He's talking about, well, in fact, the language he uses here is intense introversion of the mind, right? A deep looking to see the answer. And so what that probably means for some of us is that there are even times during the waking state when we're not going to practice inquiry. If we have to look very, very deeply, we may not practice inquiry, for example, while driving. You know, we might be lightly aware of awareness and stay in the present moment and practice the loving all method, but it might be a mistake to go deep into that looking, because when you go deep into that looking, the mind does go in an introverted way, and you can lose contact with what's happening on the outside. And in fact, Michael Langford, in The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, he doesn't talk about self-inquiry. He talks about awareness, watching awareness. But he makes the same point that you can't always do that during the waking state. And he uses kind of a funny example. But he says, you know, if you're doing that while brushing your teeth, you might put shaving cream on your toothbrush. And, you know, that would be kind of yucky, but not near as bad as possibly having a car accident or something. I would be much more willing to practice it while brushing my teeth than while driving, you know. So, besides, I don't even have any shaving cream, so I'm pretty safe. But, you know, these are the types of things I think it's helpful to be aware of, is the difference between a purely mental self-inquiry that really isn't going deep, and then that deep, deep looking. And notice even when I say it, watch what happens to me when I say it. That deep, deep looking. See how the eyes close? Even the eyes are going introverted, deep looking, right? So again, this is why Michael Langford gave us the loving all method. It's so that we are not ever not practicing. Assuming that's what we want to do, is practice all the time, be completely consistent. And in those periods of time when we are unable to practice self-inquiry or awareness, watching awareness, because it's the deep introvert version and we do need to be out, like when we're driving, then what we practice is the loving all method, right? And just in case there's somebody listening who doesn't know what the loving all method is, well, the words kind of describe it. It's loving everything, no matter what it is. But the short of it is, if you can't love it, you know, if there's something that you find that you can't love, then you accept it as it is. And if you find something that you just can't even accept, then you emotionally allow it, which really means allow your own emotions about it, right? Which we call rest, accept, and trust. And that's the loving awe method. And notice I'm able to talk about the loving awe method and keep my eyes open. You see, it's actually not a deeply introverted practice. You can do this with your eyes open. So you have the loving awe method to practice when you need to, your attention needs to be out. And then when you can bring your attention in, you practice self-inquiry or awareness watching awareness, which ultimately are the same thing. So self-inquiry is really possible only through intense introversion of the mind. What is finally realized as a result of such inquiry into the source of the I thought is verily the heart. And of course, we know that the heart is synonymous with pure consciousness for Ramana Maharshi. The heart as the undifferentiated light of pure consciousness, into which the reflected light of the mind is completely absorbed. And that would be the death of the mind. The mind is completely absorbed in the pure consciousness. And this does happen, from what I understand, for most people, temporarily before it happens permanently. So there are experiences of complete absorption of the mind. It would seem like there is no mind. It would seem like a death of the mind for a temporary period of time. And then the mind is reborn again. And this is a process that can actually be quite common. And in fact, it can happen over and over again over a number of years before finally the mind is absorbed and not reborn again. So it's just something to be aware of. Sometimes people mistake these temporary experiences for awakening. And with the mind back in place, they claim awakening because they did have the experience of the mind being completely absorbed. But it was the temporary rather than the permanent. And an awakening is the permanent absorption of the mind, right? Rather than these temporary tastes that can happen along the way. So the next question, for the enlightened one, then, there is no distinction between the three states of mind. And Ramana Maharshi says, how can there be when the mind itself is dissolved and lost in the light of consciousness? And there's more to this answer, but the first sentence makes so much sense. You know, he says, how can there be? Out here, we won't even go all the way up to the first principle. So again, if you've awakened to the second principle of God, you can't be affected by anything in the fourth principle of God, right? So, so again, the question was, for the Anani, then, there is no distinction between the three states of mind. And Ramana Maharshi says, how can there be when the mind itself is dissolved and lost in the light of consciousness? For the Yanani, or the enlightened one, all three states are equally unreal. But the unenlightened is unable to comprehend this, because for him, the standard of reality is the waking state. Whereas for the enlightened, the standard of reality is reality itself. Now that's a dang interesting sentence. I mean, just listen to that. The standard of reality for the unenlightened one is the waking state. We perceive that one state of mind to be reality. And of course, that's true because we do not perceive our dreaming state to be reality, right? We might temporarily, when we're in it, but when we wake up from it, we totally accept it was not real. And we don't even think about the deep sleep state, right? We don't give any thought to it. So the state that we perceive as reality is the waking state. So he says, to the unenlightened one, the standard of reality is the waking state, whereas for the enlightened one, the standard of reality is reality itself. This reality of pure consciousness is eternal by its nature and therefore subsists equally during what you call waking, dreaming, and sleep. And Michael Langford speaks about this too. When he asks us to practice awareness, watching awareness, he tells us this isn't some unusual awareness we're looking for. It's just the awareness that wakes up in the morning, right? But later he admits that the awareness doesn't actually wake up in the morning. That's just how it seems to us, right? So the awareness itself is always the same. And when we awaken to the awareness, we're then beyond the three states. And the three states do not affect me awareness when my identity is there. Right? The three states do not affect me, just like sickness does not affect me. Emotions do not affect me. Death does not affect me. But the me in that sentence is the awareness or the pure consciousness, not the body, not the personality, and not the mind. And again, this is where some people misunderstand the teachings. They think, for example, the body is not supposed to get sick. Or they think the mind is not supposed to get sleepy and tired. You know, I must be judging too much. I'm tired, right? you know, I must be out of alignment with God, out of harmony with God, or afraid of God because I'm sick, you know. But the I is in the wrong place there. You see, they think the body is supposed to be attain some level of perfection. The mind is supposed to attain some level of perfection because that's what I means to them. When actually the I that does not get sick, the I that does not get tired, right? The I that does not die is awareness, not the body personality. Yeah, and I do remember I've talked before about when we're insane Course in Miracles students, you know, and some of that insanity does kind of manifest as if we get a cold or a headache, we feel guilty, you know, or even if we get tired, because there's some line in the course about judgments, what makes you tired? So we get tired, we get sleepy, and we feel guilty. And that's just really not understanding what the unaffected self is. And the body is not it. In fact, the body of Ramana Maharshi died of sarcoma. The body of Nisargadatta died of cancer. The body of Buddha died of illness. I don't know what illness. And then, of course, the body of Jesus died of crucifixion. You know, every master's body has died of something, right? So that's when we talk about I am eternal, they are not referring to the body. So this reality of pure consciousness is eternal by its nature and therefore subsists equally during what you call waking, dreaming, and sleep. To him who is one with that reality, there is neither the mind nor its three states, and therefore neither introversion or extroversion. So that point, again, going within can only occur for as long as we are unenlightened. And you will hear people who have woken up. In fact, when I get to reading from Bernadette Roberts, she talks about waking up to the point there was no inside, no outside, and she could no longer be introverted. Right? No longer could she go within. And again, people get insane. I'll call this non-dual insanity more than Course in Miracles insanity, because I think it happens more in the non-dual world. But the non-dual insanity is, oh, I'm not supposed to go within anymore, right? Because if I'm going within, that means I'm not awake, and I want to be awake right now. That's, you know, jumping right over the path. You go within until there isn't a within, right? That's a big difference. So there is no such thing as inside, outside in a very genuine way, then how could you go within? But as long as there is an inside, outside, you go within. Funny how the ego twists all these good teachings, isn't it? Just twists the heck out of them. So the enlightened one is the ever-waking state. Because he is awake, to the eternal self. His is the ever dreaming state, because to him, the world is no better than a repeatedly presented phenomenon of dream. His is the ever sleeping state, because he is at all times without the body and eye consciousness. So just briefly to go over these, I'm going to go in reverse order. When he says that the enlightened one is in the ever sleeping state, what he really means is when we're asleep, we are not thinking, I am the body, right? Well, he is never thinking that he is the body. Therefore, it's like the ever sleeping state. When he says he's in the ever dreaming state, what he means is because he is never in a moment confused that the entire world is nothing more than a dream. He never for a moment thinks that anything in perception is real. And then, of course, when he says he's ever in the awake sleep, it is because he is awake to the eternal self. So he kind of just redefined those terms to explain the experience of the enlightened one. And with that, my time is up. So I'll mark it in my book, and that's where we will begin next week. And I'm releasing the mic.